responsible for the views, actions, statements, or opinions of its guests, advertisers, or even its viewers. The information contained in this program is not to be construed as medical or legal advice. An appearance on this platform is not necessarily an endorsement, but as always, we encourage you to do your own research. Enjoy the show. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Friday Night Livestream. Hope you guys are having a lovely day. This week has kind of been crazy, what with the weather and, gosh, everything else going on. But my guest tonight is a woman named Moira Mills. Now, Moira was a child to English immigrants, if I'm not mistaken, and she grew up in Alaska. Already a couple of non-standard life things happening there. I mean, not living in the city. I lived in the city my whole life, okay? And I didn't go to public school, but I went to private school. But I think that one of the subjects that we recognize here on the show but haven't really had the opportunity to discuss yet is the American education system. I think we can agree that it is irrevocably broken. It's designed to give our children a disadvantage in life. I mean, how can you be controlled if you're not already controlled? They propagandize. Take a look at TikTok and what's going on with teachers today. They want to turn our kids into something they're not. And my guest tonight, Moira, she is a proponent of an unorthodox and unusual school, or style, rather, of education. It's called unschooling. I think that this has an opportunity to solve a lot of the problems that we recognize and know exist. So I'm pleased to welcome Moira here for the first time tonight. But without further ado, please sit back, relax, and grab your popcorn, because I have this special message from the sponsor of this program. Please join me in welcoming my guest for this evening, Moira Mills. Moira, how are you tonight, my friend?
I am doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. As I was saying, we have the hurricane barreling through Florida. I know that right now it's hitting the Carolinas and it is back to hurricane status. So I would like to ask that everybody in the audience not only continue to pray for the people here in Florida that have been affected. We've got 1.4 million people without power at all, but also all of the people who are still in the path of Hurricane Ian. Now, Moira, you're up in New York. I know it's unusual for a hurricane to hit up there, but it has happened before. Has that happened since you've been living in New York?
No, but we definitely feel... Wait, hold on. Katrina.
Katrina, I mean, okay.
We had Katrina. That was kind of the big storm. I was living on Long Island at the time. We always get the aftermath. We always get some really windy days after, but that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I think people, you know, I've had a lot of people in the chat saying, oh, it's just a tropical storm over here. But, you know, our beach is gone. Our pier is gone. Every business and home along the coast was flooded. We had, you know, people inland that were also flooded. We've got trees down all over the neighborhood. You know, I mean, just those winds alone can do a lot of damage. Also, there's a bit of new construction in the neighborhood and every single porta potty was completely flipped and thrown. Lisa and I today were like, why don't they just put some cinder blocks in the bottom, or why don't they just pick them up? I mean, they know that they're going to get damaged. So I don't know. I would hate to be that guy that has to go in and clean up that mess.
Yeah.
All right. So, Moira, once again, thank you very much for joining us tonight. As I was saying in the introduction, we know the education system's broken. We know that it's a problem. And I've seen a lot of parents in the chat before kind of wringing their hands, wondering, what am I supposed to do? Because the way our system is designed, they force us into a number of different things. You know, it used to be that the father would go work, the mother would stay home, and we would have this kind of traditional nuclear family relationship. And they have taken that relationship and strained it and kind of stretched it to the breaking point, to where in many cases, people, both parents are having to work. A lot of times, you know, I've been working since I was 12 years old. You know, I mean, there are plenty of families out there who had to send their kids out there to work. I mean, it was like that, you know, a long time ago, a turn of the century, but you know, now it's a different type of thing. I mean, people are stacked up on each other like ants in the city. And, you know, you have these horrific influences coming from all around, from the government, from the media, from television, from the other children, from older adults that are having an undue influence on these children. And I think that homeschooling and what you call unschooling is a real answer. So first of all, I want to hear a little bit about your childhood, because growing up in Alaska, I think that's pretty sweet. My father, who passed away in 2009, he loved Alaska. It was his favorite place to go. And I actually went there to shed his ashes at the giant park. What's the huge park? Denali. Denali National Park. Yeah.
Nice.
Went there for a couple of weeks with a buddy of mine, and I spread his ashes at a place called Sanctuary Creek. And
that's
loved
great.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved Alaska. I thought it was beautiful. And I have some friends that live there today, you know, living off the land, really kind of, you know, doing it as our forefathers did. You know, I mean, it's different out there.
Yes, it is. It is. And I left about 18 years ago now. I've been back once, but I spent my first 22 years living there. And we lived a pretty, you know, we did all of those things that you think of. Well, I don't know what people think of when they think of Alaska, actually. I know there's a lot of the reality TV shows now there. But, you know, I was just talking to somebody about, like, this time of year, we're doing the subsistence fishing. So you put set nets out in the mouth of the river and you get hundreds of fish, you know, moose hunting, ice fishing, all of that stuff, which I have a little taste of here in upstate New York. Because we're close to the, I'm in upstate, so I'm close to the Adirondacks, which is nice. It's a similar kind of feel. Vermont has a bit of a similar feel, but it is beautiful.
So as a child, you know, I mean, you mentioned all those things. I mean, how old were you when you first started helping out around the house?
I mean, I was helping as early as I can remember, you know, from weeding the garden. Chickweed is the thing up there. I come here and I'm like, where's the chickweed? Like, in the garden, it's just taken over. At least that was our garden. Weeding the garden, you know, helping my dad butcher animals, going fishing, clam digging, all of that stuff. We were always a part of that. And because I never went to school, I was always a part of it all year long.
Yeah. Yeah. So when do you think your proper education began? I mean, was all of that, all of those activities, was that part of it? Or was there a moment at which your mom and dad said, you know, okay, we need to throw some other things in here and actually ensure that you're getting an education? Or was it always part of it?
So I think that there was a bit of a discussion around the time. So my sister was in public school up until fourth grade, which is when I started kindergarten. The reason that my mom started doing unschooling with me in kindergarten is there wasn't a kindergarten program in our hometown. Mm-hmm. And then it just evolved from that. I loved it so much. Then my sister was like, hey, why does she get to stay home all day when I have to go to school? So then she came in the next year. And I remember at some point they bought books. Mm-hmm. You know, we had textbooks laying around, but we never used them. At least I don't have a memory of ever using them because I was so busy. Animals were my thing. I loved raising animals. So a lot of my education came around that. So by the time I was in junior high, I thought I was going to be a veterinarian. Mm-hmm. I was like all planning on heading out and being a large livestock vet because my life had been animals. So
I was just going to ask if you could define the term unschooling for us and maybe, you know, explain how it differs from a traditional homeschool education, which I don't know about everybody else in the audience. But when I think about homeschooling, I just think about the mom sitting around with, you know, either one child or a number of children and going over a set of lesson plans. And then, you know, definitely incorporating some of those other subsistence living type activities in there.
So the general idea, I also call it child-led learning. It's really or interest-driven. Mm-hmm. So instead of thinking about education in terms of subjects, so reading, writing, and arithmetic, you think in terms of interests and passion. So you can find all the subjects in anything you're interested in. Not all the subjects, but you can find a collection of subjects in all the things that you're interested in. So for me, it was animals. So I really like using the example of raising animals. So I was really big into 4-H. They have a junior market livestock program. So you raise an animal from their weaning age till market, you sell them at the market. So you can learn math through formulating their food. So you have to research what an animal needs to eat. So you learn through that. Then you formulate what the nutritional needs are. So that's different if you have, say, a milk cow or if you have an animal that's going to market. So if you're not buying pre-formulated food, then you're figuring out what are the nutrients that this animal needs. So that's really how I ended up doing it, because I didn't really want to be around people at that age. I really liked to be on my own. So basically my parents said, you can have any animal that you want. It has to pay for itself. You have to figure out how to pay for it. And it has to provide some benefit. So in Alaska, a horse, as much as I feel like every little girl wants a horse, that was off the table because you have to buy so much hay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of expenses that go along with the horse.
So I ended up settling on wool sheep was kind of one of my main things. They're great because you don't have to butcher them. You can raise them for fiber arts, and there's a whole bunch of things that you can do with that.
So, well, I'm sorry, you said a lol sheep? I don't know what that is. I mean, I know what, like,
a wool sheep.
Okay. Wool sheep. So just like the normal, like, English countryside sheep that you would expect to see roaming around. Okay.
Yes.
So your relationship with that animal, I mean, was that like a dog or a cat? I mean, I haven't spent a lot of time with sheep before, and I've always wondered, you know, if an animal like that is in your life, I mean, does it develop like the same types of behavioral traits, and does it know you?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. So, I mean, we had kind of everything minus cattle and horses. So, I mean, goats have such a personality to them. Sheep, it's a different personality. They're much mellower. You know, we had pigs, ducks, geese, all sorts of, also rabbits. I think I started with rabbits.
Rabbits are great.
My dad's father was a ranch manager all over the country when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. So that was his background. And then my mom was born in Manchester, England. Her mom was a war bride. So that kind of brings in that English countryside piece for me. So it was kind of the perfect pairing.
So what was it that made your parents want to go live in Alaska and raise you there rather than going someplace else? I mean, America's a huge nation, so there's all kinds of places to go. But what was it about Alaska?
So it was really my dad. He moved up there when he was 8. I think he was 18, getting away from the rest of the world. Like a lot of people back then went to Alaska, bought a part of an old homestead. And, you know, just wanted to cut himself off from what we call the lower 48. Mm-hmm. And then my mom actually hitchhiked up there to spend a summer a few years later. And they met, my grandfather introduced them. And I don't think she ever planned on staying in Alaska, but they got married and here we are.
That's great. How much room to roam did you have? Did you have any, like, feelings or expectations of limitations? I mean, were you just, like, free to do whatever you wanted?
So, no, there was a lot of responsibility. Well, okay, yes and no. There was a lot of responsibility. So, since I went through this type of education, there's this new movement in unschooling called radical unschooling. Mm-hmm. And that is really that's not something that I support. And my understanding of it is that's complete freedom to kind of, you know, run wild and do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it. And in this day and age, it seems to be, you know, if they want to stay up until 3 a.m. playing video games or on YouTube, or if they want to eat, you know, M&Ms, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, then that's called bodily autonomy.
Oh my gosh. No, I don't think that's like a Mowgli child. I mean, out in the Alaskan wilderness, they'll be sleeping with the bears and eating M&Ms. No, it's not a good idea.
But a lot of people I run into, when they hear the term unschooling, they link into that.
Okay.
Oh, it's just this, you know, there's no responsibility at all.
Hands off.
In my opinion, that's really kind of the left kind of inserting itself and turning something that's not inherently what it is into something else. So I worked a lot as a kid. And it so I kind of heard two questions there. One was, so I was constantly doing stuff. We always were. I mean, I never told my dad I felt bored because there was going to be a long list of things that we, you know, got to go do. But then also this sense of freedom in that there's less than 1% of the state of Alaska that's in private ownership. So you have this feeling of just this vast amount of freedom. And I remember learning very young, you don't just walk out in the woods. That was the most bizarre thing when I moved to New York. Because if you get on a road, you drive out and you just run into another town. That's not what happens in Alaska. You drive to the end of a road in rural Alaska, and you get to the end and you turn around and you drive out of it. So I remember learning really young, you have to be very well aware of your surroundings. You have to know where you're going, because very easily you can get out in the wilderness where no one has been before and you can easily get lost. So that was pounded into us as a child. So it's very, so I think that that, you know, plays a part in kind of developing just how you are in the world with, well, what am I interested in? There's so much possibility and there's so much freedom, but also there's a reality that we have to deal with.
So based upon your unusual upbringing, you know, how do you feel it prepared you in ways that would be better from a traditional education that somebody might get? Because, I mean, let's say somebody goes to a public school. You've got the regimen of having to wake up on time, and you have the responsibility of, you know, making sure that you're going to all your classes. You have the socialization of people. And then, of course, you have the regimented subject matter that you have to actually absorb and then do work on every single day. But how do you think that your unschooling better prepared you?
So one of the things that I recognized way back when I started doing this work to help families was that there's more than one way to do things. There's not just, you don't have to, you know, get the job and, you know, get into an entry level kind of job, work your way up through the company. This is an example of it, and wait to be promoted. I always grew up around a very entrepreneurially minded kind of mindset of, well, what do you see in the world that you're passionate about and that you care about? And I think that that's the number one thing that the current model destroys pretty successfully, is a passion for what do you care about? What are you interested in? Because when you wake up in the morning, when there's something you're interested in, nobody has to go tell you, now you have to go do more of that, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to tell a toddler, okay, it's time to get up and like practice crawling. Any parent knows you can't stop a toddler from wanting to learn how to crawl. You can't stop them from wanting to learn a new language. So I think that there is a lot of, I've seen through my whole life in my peers, a lot of people that are waiting for somebody else to start something or to do something or to tell them what to do and how to do it and when to do it and why to do it. And I think that that's one of the number one things.
I also think that in our modern education system, I mean, you're right, people are just kind of told that they have to do things in a certain way. They have to do certain things. They have to learn certain things. And, you know, the only stuff that we have for children out there in the world now is like going online, playing video games, and nobody really gets into a whole host of other subjects that they might find are really what's interesting to them. And therefore, they don't ever get exposed to them. What do you see is the greatest issues with our current education system here in America?
Well, I'll start with what I think is number one, which is it's all directed by someone else telling you, okay, now you're 10 years old, this is what you learned. And nobody stops and steps back and says, well, who determined that? The Department of Education? How are they determining that? So every 7.5-year-old learns exactly the same thing at exactly the same time. And it's determined, number one, that it's determined by somebody else. Nobody asks the kids, hey, what interests you? So there's a couple different paradigms of thinking. We can either look at children as this empty vessel like a computer that needs to be downloaded with the appropriate programs, software, hardware, and it's not functioning until it gets those downloads. Or we can look at a child as this beautiful seed, which I believe that God created all of us, the development that a child goes through in the first few years is incredible. Mm-hmm. So I think that I lost my train of thought.
We're talking about what's wrong with education in America.
So we're never, yeah. Okay. So a seed, sorry. So a seed, the other way of looking at a child is that this is seed and it contains everything that it needs. It needs good soil. It needs nutrition. It needs sunlight. It needs love. Right. Mm-hmm. But it already has contained within it this beautiful blueprint. And it's about fostering that plant to develop and grow, not telling it, now you have to be this. So Rolfing is what my training is. And that is a lot of looking at the body as a living dynamic system. And I believe, I truly believe that we are designed beautifully, but we really need to get out of the way and stop trying to overthink that. Mm-hmm. I think it starts, I mean, you know, we can go all the way back to pregnancy. I think it starts when it's like, we've determined that now it's time for you to give birth. If you haven't given birth by this date, now we're going to induce you.
Right. Right. No now, trusting your body or the natural right, process.
Right. That we're not trusting it at all. And there's a lot of, you know, babies have this beautiful whole process of, if you lay them on their back, they figure out how to push themselves to their belly. They figure out how to push themselves into seated. They figure out how to push themselves into crawling. Crawling is super, super important because it develops muscles in the core that if we miss that, it's something that is going to show up later in life. And they figure out how to push themselves into standing. So that is nothing you have to say, now you have to do this step. It's already there. They want to do it.
So do you think like all of the tools and implements that they designed to like sit babies up and like hold them in a, is that bad, you think?
I think it's all useless.
Yeah, I mean, everything is designed to turn your child into a consumer before they can even feed themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, also another thing that's missing, in my opinion, from education is, I mean, you know, trusting in that process and understanding that divinity that exists, you know, the idea that you are a perfect being that was created by God and that, you know, everything will work out as long as you allow yourself to kind of naturally in tune to what that should be. And they have all of those artificial you know, like steps and dates, you know, like, you know, everything has to be this by this point. Certainly the vaccination schedule, I think, puts our children at a massive disadvantage. I would imagine since you grew up in rural Alaska that your parents probably weren't making sure that you had 35 vaccinations by the time you were three.
Nope. No. I just always assumed that I wouldn't because I didn't experience it. Same thing. I never considered putting my son in public school because it didn't really occur to me as an option.
Yeah. So how many children do you have now? Just the one or do you have multiple?
One. No, just one.
Okay.
One almost 7-year-old boy.
All right. And so what you're doing right now is kind of teaching other parents these tenets of unschooling that you went through yourself. You know, tell us how that began. I understand during the scamdemic, the plandemic, that you kind of started something up to fill that gap where public schools and private schools were shut down.
So I started a pop-up playground. Actually, can I share my screen and sure. Show some pictures?
Sure, sure. Let me make you a co-host and you can go ahead and do that. And okay, there you go.
So I started doing this event back in the idea of it came in 2016. So really what I'm doing is talking about the philosophy. So when families think about unschooling or think about homeschooling, if they've never considered it before, can you see my screen? If they've never considered it before, the first question is curriculum. I need curriculum. What curriculum am I going to get? Is this a better curriculum than that? And I say the question that really needs to happen before we get into the curriculum question is philosophy. There's a lot of different philosophies. So My main thing is to say, hey, there is the philosophy that they use in the public schools. That's definitely an option. But there's another philosophy over here, and that's the child-led or self-directed type. So this is an event that I started doing here in, I was in downtown Albany at the time. I started doing with about 20 people around one of these trees over here. And it was amazing. It built to the largest one had about 270 people, I think. And then a photographer, a photojournalist donated her time and she came and captured what was happening. So I don't want to spend too much time, but I think that this seeing the visual really helps.
Sure.
Kind of particularly. So we're going to see younger kids, but this is the same process that can happen in older years as well. This is just, you're going to see like 2 to 7 year olds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's, unschooling is built on the foundation of when you teach a child something, you take away forever his chance of discovering it for himself. So it's not about not teaching them anything. It's about exposing them to all sorts of different experiences to see what they're drawn to. And then you foster more of those experiences. And then you continue adding. So you have a really broad kind of life experience at a very young age. Okay, so this is just a few of the pictures that she captured that I think, I mean, I smile every time I look at these. These were so much fun. Yeah. So I think he was shooting the tree, I'm pretty sure.
It looks like he's holding a bazooka or something.
This is a bicycle tire that had mm-hmm. been turned into a hula hoop. So basically, so a little bit of background, what I did is I just brought a whole bunch of junk to the park in downtown Albany. Didn't ask permission. I just started doing it. And people loved it. And people were coming back month after month. So I was obsessively going to thrift stores and finding more junk, cardboard boxes to tires, to wood blocks, things that didn't really, anything that didn't have a single purpose to it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's three pictures here. This is, I took finger paint, non-toxic, biodegradable finger paint and put it in spray bottles and watered it down. I had a great team of other moms that were supporting and helping keep these bottles filled. So this little boy walks over. So another thing that was great about these pop-ups is all these kids were out together.
Mm-hmm.
It's because another downside of our current system is that we segregate kids.
Right.
So we say segregation is bad, but then in the next breath, we think it totally makes sense to send all 15-year-olds together and all 14-year-olds together, and mm-hmm. they never really cross paths.
Yeah.
So this is an opportunity where these kids, you know, when I started it, parents would ask, what's the age range? And I was like, birth to 11. And the only reason 11 is because 12 and 13-year-olds are kind of moving out of, they'll be more bored, I think.
Right, right.
But like, bring everybody. So I love this little sequence. There's learning happening here.
Yeah.
And it's really important that we recognize that there's learning happening here. Because there's more learning happening here than there is in memorizing, you know, facts for a test that you're going to forget the next day. This is actual learning. And this is the foundation. Now, another thing that people will say is, but reading, writing, and arithmetic. Well, of course, those things are important. Mm-hmm. Nobody says that they're not. But when we're so focused on that, we assume that the child isn't going to be interested in learning those things
mm-hmm.
without coercion or force of some sort, right? So this right here is the what you're seeing in these pictures is the foundation of, huh, what's this? And that's the spark that needs to be fostered. So we all say that cardboard boxes are like, the kids like the cardboard box better than the toy.
Yeah, yeah.
But we still buy all the toys.
I mean, I got to be honest. I mean, you know, getting my hands on a refrigerator box as a kid and like making a fort or, you know, a tunnel or a spaceship. I mean, that's some of the most fun that I had. And,
right?
You know, obviously you don't really get to do that in school.
No.
Yeah. So.
Well, because. Yep.
No. I was just going to say something, but you go ahead. Go ahead. If you had another point on here. Yeah, that's me.
So these were like, somebody was giving like 50 of these. I think they were like map or poster roll cardboard boxes. Mm-hmm. They had ended their, I think, Etsy business and they were just giving them away. And I was like, yes,
definitely.
And they were, I mean, everything from, you know, a sword to, you know, a post in the ground.
Yeah, that's great.
This was kind of some of the aftermath. So I really love this one.
That's cute.
I mostly love this one because people really don't like it.
I don't know why people, I mean, I guess I can see if it springs back and hits them in the face, but, you know.
Imagine the learning.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, obviously I think this was probably pretty important because everything was shut down. Kids were not given the ability to like play with each other and they were being told to stay apart.
No, this was, so this, I started in 2016.
This is in 2017. Okay.
Yeah. 2017, 2018, 2019. So these pictures were taken, like, I think these were the summer of 2019. So this is when I was shifting into, I had put all of my own resources into building it to this point, mm-hmm. and I wanted to start selling sponsorships to local businesses, like mm-hmm. sponsor it for a month. I'll get teenagers to schlep all of the stuff back and forth. And then, like, I had the sponsorship packet all created. I started handing it out to businesses, like, the beginning of March 2020. Everything, you know. So then I took pause and I kind of stepped back to say, I'm still doing this, but it's going to look a little different. Oh, so I wanted to say with him, when he made that, he goes, hey, look, I made a Hedipult.
Oh, I love it.
Okay, so this is a sheet. I watered down all of these finger paints, and the other moms helped a lot, and they spray painted these sheets, which was so much fun. And I actually still have a lot of them, and I turned one into an art piece.
That's really cool.
Again, tires, messy. Families were bringing a second set of clothes by the end of this, because they were super messy. Okay. So then I just want to go through this little slideshow. She captured something playing out with a group of boys that I think really captures what was happening at the pop-ups. And again, what can happen at any age if given the time and the space to just explore. So these boys had found, this is actually the side of a crib that someone gave me when my son was born and I never used. So it's turning into a ladder here. So it's just a group of kids and they bring it over to the tree. They leaned it up. What I love about this picture is you see the different ages working together. You see the younger ones observing the older ones, and you don't see that anymore. I mean, if you have a big family and the cousins all get together on a Sunday afternoon, you'll see it. But the general population, you don't see it. Also, you see the parents are there, but they're not right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's important to give them that space. Well, like I said here, to let them, allow them to be curious.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that that's also something that's definitely missing from a traditional education is that instead of going out and exploring and really, you know, determining what these kids might be doing or how to solve a problem themselves, everyone is waiting for the teacher to tell them how they're supposed to be doing these things.
Yes.
And that's created kind of generation after generation of people who are just followers instead of being leaders. You know, I mean, even in the Patriot movement today, you see people who are just waiting for other people to tell them what to do or tell them how to solve a problem. Rather than going out there and doing it themselves. I mean, it's universal. Yeah. I mean, and I guess it's probably not just here in America. I mean, take a look at Scandinavian countries, and they are perfect obedient sheep.
I do want to get into that.
Yeah.
Because I have something to say about that after this, because I think it's really important. I want to say here, risks, allowing kids to take risks. Now, I am never saying put a 2-year-old in the room with razor blades.
Sure.
That's a hazard, but kids need exposed to risk. Risk mm-hmm. assessment is a really important skill in adulthood. We Absolutely. Really need to understand how to do risk assessment in our everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when they're practicing it. It's a lot better to fall out of a 5-foot tree than, you know, something that can happen when you're an adult.
Definitely. Definitely.
So you learn and you build on it. And kids are great at it when they are given the chance.
So, you know, also, this is another thing that I think has been taken to the extreme today. I mean, you see parents, especially people who are proponents of the jab, you know, they are loaded up. They've got a hand sanitizer bottle. They're wearing gloves. They're wearing a mask. They're sanitizing everything around them. They're masking their children up, essentially keeping them in a plastic bubble and really sheltering them from anything that they might be able to experience organically on their own. And I have, I have a great bit of trepidation about what's going to happen to this latest generation. I mean, the TikTok generation, Gen Z, whatever you might want to call it. They're great at doing dances on camera, but I mean, when it comes to anything of real skill or note, what are they going to do? What do they understand, and where is the world going to go as a result?
No, absolutely. I think that's really important. I mean, just being out in the dirt, it's so important. I mean, there's studies out there that show kids raised on a farm are typically much healthier, but just being in dirt.
Right, exactly.
Getting dirty. I was reading a comment in one of the homeschool groups on Facebook the other day, and she was like, "Help, I can't figure out how to get the dirt out of my son's fingernails every day. It won't come out in the bath." And I was like, "Leave it. It's fine. It's fine." And it's really, really healthy. The kids need to be exposed to that kind of stuff. Go roll around in some dirt.
Mm-hmm.
It is really important. So again, all the skills that were missing in this current generation, this is when they're practiced. These are the ages that they're practiced. So how can we expect children or adults to value freedom when they never had it?
Right.
How can we expect adults to value anything if they don't have an experience of doing it? So there's a lot of, well, you've got to listen to this and follow directions, be told what to do as a seven-year-old. That's good because it's easy for adults to handle 20 kids to do that. But then miraculously, they're supposed to turn 18 and be self-driven, problem-solving,
right,
free-thinking, go against the grain adults. It's not realistic. And we've got to see the disconnect there. And until we see it, we're going to get the same thing. So, and this is another example of communicating and working together. Like, kids can't do that now. You know, they're stopping games like, since I didn't grow up in the school, I can never remember the name of this game. You throw a ball at somebody, dodgeball.
Dodgeball, yeah.
So, or tag even. Okay, so they're getting rid of tag in some schools because kids are not, they're not aware, and they're hitting kids too hard because they don't understand, like, how to be in contact with other people. So instead of going, this is a problem, we need to figure this out as a society, this is not the right direction, they say, oh, we're just going to ban tag. Right. Well, that's not going to fix it. We're taking away any kind of opportunity, right?
Right.
And really, we've got to give kids space. So I think a lot of what we see playing out here, if you're over 30, this was your childhood, or mm-hmm. over 35, this was your childhood, but it doesn't exist anymore for kids. Unless you live out in the country, you've got a big family, like the grandparents have a farm that you go play on, and all your cousins come. But that's not a majority of kids anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just really love this picture because, he's just how they're watching each other.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up building a swing. Nobody saw it coming. I don't know if that was their idea from the beginning, how it changed. No adult told them, now go figure out how to build a swing and then we're going to test you on it. The test was, did he fall here? Mm-hmm. And he didn't.
Very cool. Very, very
and so
cool.
Then this boy did it a little different and it was great. So I think that the best thing that we can do for our children is to allow them to do things for themselves. I mean, it seems so simple. Allow sure. them to be strong, allow them to experience life on their own terms. So unschooling isn't about, so I do use unschooling and child-led very interchangeably because that's education as much as anything is education. So we need to allow them to figure things out on their own and to figure out what they care about. And when they're being told how to do it, what to do, when to do it, we're stopping that whole process. And this goes along to adulthood too. Play is often talked about as if it were a relief from serious learning. I mean, how many adults, it's like we stop our work and we go on vacation. Mm-hmm. We got to get a break away from it. But for children, play is serious learning.
Absolutely. There's a lot going on, a lot of complicated processes happening in the brain. I can see how, you know, the ingenuity, the experimentation, even engineering and problem solving all coming into play. But you had mentioned earlier the idea of radical unschooling, you know, that kind of absolute hands off, you know. So my real question is, how do we take this and implement it into something that also makes sure that our children have the full complement of you know, like you said, reading, writing, and arithmetic? Somebody in the chat said that they knew somebody whose kid can't read. Obviously, we can't allow kids to do whatever they want and not give them some level of foundation. So how do we make sure that that kids also have those necessary skills that are going to come in, you know, in anything they choose to do?
Okay, so one statistic that I do want to throw out there is that before compulsory education, so that started in the 1850s, mm-hmm. before compulsory education, this was a report that came out from Ted Kennedy's office back in the early 90s. Before compulsory education, our country had a 98% literacy rate.
Oh, wow.
98%. Do you want to guess what our literacy rate is now?
It definitely less than 98%. That's
incredible. Well, even the official websites say 90 to 91.
Okay.
But there was an article that came out in our local newspaper even 20 years ago that stated that even then, 20 years ago, 48% of graduating high schoolers were not proficient enough in reading and writing to fill out a typical job application.
That's shocking. More than half of us, about half of us are unable to fill out a job application.
And we're seeing it. I mean, it was a couple years ago that somebody in California tried to put a bill up that said it wasn't a requirement to graduate high school to be able to read or to write or read and write. I can't remember.
Wow. So, they're also not enforcing a high school education now for people to join the military. It seems to be that at the same time they have dumbed down the education system. They have reinforced this idea that you have to go through that traditional education system in order to do anything in the world. But then they're making sure that you can't ask people questions like that. Are you able to read or write? Or if you're unable to read and write, then you are somehow enforcing a stereotype because you're expecting that somebody should be able to.
The other thing that I want to say to that is I'd be curious to know how old this child is. So yeah. I don't know how many people are familiar with Rudolf Steiner or the Waldorf School, but Rudolf Steiner, one of the pieces about that is they don't even talk about reading until the child is 6 or even 7.
Okay.
So our whole population has been really, in my opinion, brainwashed to think that you have to learn how to read at like 4 and 5. And if you're not reading at 5, you're behind somehow. But there's no research out there to say that reading earlier makes someone who loves learning. So number one, we can develop a society of perfect readers, but if they don't have a passion for reading and all they're doing is doing TikTok videos, mm-hmm. what good is that?
Sure.
So is it a skill at reading which can be taught? So the basics of reading, writing, and arithmetic, there's a lot of research out there to say, can be taught in less than 100 hours. So that's the basics that get you to a point where you can take yourself further. But 100 hours, but that's when the child is ready. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this idea that, again, the Department of Education or who determined that a child should start learning how to read at 5 years old. If they learn how to read at 5 years old, are they more of do they have a love of learning? Well, no mm-hmm. research shows that. So,
I think it's this idea that things have to be standardized. You know, we have the standardized tests and everybody has to know, you know, A, B, and C at a certain point. But I think that realistically, we have a lot of diversity in terms of, you know, talent and, you know, ability. And people are not necessarily going to be at the same level at the same time. And I think that puts people at a disadvantage in a traditional system of education.
Well, and do you know where standardized testing started? Standardized testing started in 7th century imperial China. Mm. The first recorded history of it. And it was to place you in your government job.
Wow.
So, and our current standardized test, the multiple choice test, was created at a time, I'm spacing on the guy's name, but it was created at a time where we had a lot of immigration into the U.S. So we went from like 250,000 to 1.5 million over that kind of around World War One, over that like 10-year span. Mm-hmm. So the creator of the current standardized test, the multiple choice test, said 10 years after he created it, is this going to ring any bells with anyone? 10 years after he created it, he said, this test is too crude and we should abandon it. But by then, it was put into every corner of our society. There was no way of getting it out. And he ended up being fired from his job as the president of a university and basically shunned from society for saying this test. So how similar is that to other tests that we have been told we have to do? Mm-hmm. This test is too crude. It's not giving you the information that you think it's giving you. And then we have Dr. Howard Gardner, who came out in the 80s to say that there's 8 or 9 different types of intelligences, and you can't test many of them in any kind of a test. So, you have, you know, it's easy to test, for like mathematical intelligence, but what if you have interpersonal intelligence or intrapersonal Sure. intelligence? You can't test for that in a standardized test anyway. So there's a great cartoon that floats around on social media, and it shows a whole bunch of animals, like an elephant and a monkey and a dog and a dolphin and a fish in a bowl. And it said, you know, we're going to rank or to, I can't remember, it says exactly like, you have to all take the same test to figure out where you are. And the test is go climb that tree. And that's basically what we're doing to kids. So some of them, there was a monkey there. Okay, the monkey will be able to do it. The bird can do it too. But if you look at how they teach school too, if the bird flies up and the test was to climb the tree, he still failed. Mm-hmm. So then we're pushing a whole bunch of kids through this system where maybe, you know, 5 or 10% of them have that mathematical or logical intelligence or something that can be tested for. But what are we pushing out the other end?
Right, right.
For the other, you know, 90, 95% of the population. And then we're telling them be passionate about something and go stand up for something because you're smart. No, they've been told they're stupid their whole lives.
Right, right. You know, I to me, what you're saying makes sense because people are different types of thinkers. They have different aptitudes and skills. And, you know, I Brooklyn, I hope you call in the second half of the show. She said that she thinks that standardized testing creates dynamic thinking. It seems to me, and from my research, that standardized testing really only shows that people, you know A, B, and C at a certain point. Not that they have any, you know, I guess, real broad spectrum of intelligence. And it doesn't take into account those people who learn and think in different ways. And it leaves people at a disadvantage if they don't really gel with the style of schooling. Now, and also I'm thinking about children who are homeschooled. They seem to be at a greater advantage in the world than the people who are sent to public schools or even to private schools where they have those kind of regimented types of lessons where they're, you know, they have like, you know, a certain set of information that they have to know by a certain point in order to get out into the world, to get their diploma. But the kids who are raised at home going through a non-standard type of education, I mean, they've been very intelligent and maybe they didn't have like, you know, certain information about certain stuff. But I think that they've been at a greater advantage to go out and find out that information. And they have a more well-rounded education when it comes to the things that they are passionate about. That's just been my experience. And I'm definitely interested, you guys, to see what you think. Here, Moira, can we go back to the regular view here?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Because we're almost to the call-in portion of the show.
Yes.
So I think the biggest issue that I can see anybody having with this is creating that balance between, allowing kids to play, allowing kids to allowing kids to play, allowing them to have that organic experience and having the fun, but then also ensuring that they have those skills and the general education skills. But also, how is this implemented in a modern world where people are not necessarily living out in rural Alaska or, rural Michigan, wherever it is, that maybe they don't have access to all of these various things that you had as a kid? So how do we strike that balance? What is that?
Well, there's all sorts of people in anybody's community that has skills with things. I mean, when I was living down in the city, going to the museums can be a way of exposing to lots of different things. You can find different clubs. Like, there's a homing pigeon club like an hour from me, and there's a group of guys that have been racing homing pigeons forever. You've got bushcraft stuff, so out in the woods where, you can get out, that's not so much an urban area, but we can get out and like build a shelter in somebody's backyard and learn how to sleep out overnight. Build a fire. You can build a fire with just a little, a flint, and so there's lots of opportunities. It's going to look different in an urban setting than it looks in a rural setting, but it's about exposing to lots of different ideas and then going with that. And you have lots of people that are passionate all around you that want to share what they know. Mm-hmm. So it's just about connecting with that.
Okay.
So it's about fostering a community.
Fostering the community. Okay. Obviously very, very important. Something we're lacking today. Okay. Brooklyn, it just corrected me. She said, no, Zach, reading comprehension creates dynamic thinking. I absolutely agree with you there. I was reading at a very young age. My mom and I have said this so many times, but my mom and I used to read books together when I was like very young. We would choose a book and then she would read a chapter and then I would read a chapter. One thing that I think is missing, and that I think kind of explains why we had such a high level of literacy in America before standardized education, is because the ability to read and I guess maybe that sense of having an education because you built it up yourself, rather than having it forced upon you.
Yes.
So people, in order to read, to show that you could read and understand and comprehend things, I mean, that was a sign that that you had bettered yourself, that you weren't just some country bumpkin and then once we have the standardized education system that comes into play, kids are forced to go to school, they're forced to leave the farms, they're forced to, enter into these kind of artificial environments and have certain information placed into their brains. But she said, no, I said the standardized testing creates unhealthy competition. I was referring to being able to read, not testing. Yes, thank you very much, Brooke. I still hope you call in the second portion of the show. But you're absolutely right. Okay, so how do we take what you experienced and teach it to other parents and give them the ability to raise children who are, interested in learning and interested in becoming what they're passionate about?
So I think that it's not about raising children to be interested. They are interested. They're inherently interested in everything around them from the beginning. We just say, oh, no, you can't learn about that. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. So you ask a 4 or 5-year-old what they want to learn about, and they have a long list of what they want to learn about. Mm-hmm. But what I'm seeing when families are pulling their like junior high school kids out of public schools now, you ask them what they're interested in and you're met with, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell me what to do.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
Like, I mean, can I go back to playing my video games?
Yeah.
Like, they don't. So it's not that we have to teach them. We have to allow that naturally to happen. And then also, I think that as adults, we really need to deprogram ourselves. So the current school system is not that old. So our current school system is from Prussia. It was brought here in the 1830s. So they teach school the same way in a communist country that we teach it in our constitutional republic. Like, that should be a red flag. Like, it's not a new thing. Traditional schooling is like what I'm talking about. This modern thing, we think it's, there's a tweet that floats around again in kind of the alternative education realm often that says, if we started teaching walking to 6 month olds in school, within a single generation, we would assume you have to go to school to learn how to walk.
That's a good point.
And that's really important. So I think that, and we see how they move so slowly, right? The indoctrination happens very slowly, one generation at a time. You don't really notice a big difference.
Yes, it's been incremental.
So if you step back and you see over a few generations, it's like, whoa, okay. I mean, there was a town in Cape Cod that was so opposed to compulsory education. They resisted it for 30 years, and the government had to send in the militia to march the kids to school. Because they were so opposed to compulsory education. That was when it was only up to eighth grade. And now more people are definitely considering homeschool, but now a majority of the population, especially before COVID, just assumed you went to public school. That wasn't that long ago. So I think that as adults, we really need to deprogram what we think education and learning is, and to recognize that we've been programmed in this. And then simultaneously to allow children to just continue to be curious and not dampen that out. And also, technology has its place. But I'm a big advocate for not letting kids around technology until they're, 4 or 5 years old at all. And then this idea that they just live on video games or live on YouTube. You need to be out in the real world experiencing things, right?
Like, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's always kind of heartbreaking when I see a parent just like hand the tablet to the kid and basically YouTube Kids is raising them. And there's a lot of dangers inherent in that. You know, I mean, like ElsaGate, I'm sure you guys are all aware of what happened with that. They had people who were creating these cartoons using popular characters from Disney and Marvel and stuff. And it had very not even overt. I mean, it was just like in your face, these themes, these adult themes, like the most sadistic type of behavior and drug use and, you know, eating poop. Just like the weirdest things that you could possibly imagine. And you have a little kid, a 4 or 5 year old girl who sees a Disney princess debasing herself in the most horrific way. And that implants itself as, you know, perhaps some type of behavior they might want to engage in when they grow up. I mean, you know, and parents would have no idea because they're doing their own thing, being forced to work multiple jobs and trying to make ends meet. And the kid is being raised 100% by YouTube Kids.
So and weird. That's, I think, where it's super important that our community really steps up to the plate. So we can't just sit around and complain that the next generation, so say I don't have kids, if I didn't have kids, I can't just sit around and complain the next generation is going, you know, down a bad path if I'm not stepping up and participating in a solution. And we really need to, this is a community issue. Now, I'm not saying that other people are responsible for raising your children. We are responsible for our own children.
Mm-hmm.
But as a society, we're all responsible for the direction the next generation is going. There's no, that's somebody else's problem.
Right.
No, it's all of our problems. But again, that gets twisted into that. I cannot stand that that phrase, it takes a village to raise a kid. No, it's the parents' responsibility to raise the children. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that we're all responsible in some way. So how can we participate? Because right now, I think it was just in 2021, there's 2 million new homeschool kids.
That's great.
There's a lot of families that are really trying right now. And I always expected to unschool my son. So this was not, I wasn't thrust upon me. Mm-hmm. But there's millions of families right now that are doing this, and they never considered it was something that they would ever do. It just never crossed their mind, and they're doing it now. And we really need to step up as communities and support that in some way. And it's going to look different for different people. But I think that that's really the key here, is that we need to get back to community.
Well, I know for a lot of people, because of the pandemic, it became a necessity the idea of homeschooling and kind of changing the way things were going. But I'm hoping now, especially because of the indoctrination that has become just really overly prevalent, you know, the TikTok teachers and the, you know, all of the crazy stuff that we've seen being pushed on our children. I mean, parents are finding out about it for the first time. I mean, it's great that they're getting involved with school boards and stuff and demanding that something change. But I mean, it's just as easy that that stuff can go back underground and then rear its ugly head.
And also, the system works perfectly the way it was designed. This system was never intended to help children. This system was set up to create a generations of people that did exactly that what we just saw in 2020.
Right, right.
You're training a generation of people to conform. Mm-hmm. You're training them. So John Taylor Gatto, who I talk about all the time, wrote a book called Dumbing Us Down, The Hidden Curriculum of Compulsory Education. And he lays out, he was awarded the number one teacher in New York State back in the 90s. And he quit his job in his acceptance speech, I think. And he wrote an essay, The Seven Lesson School Teacher. And he said, I'm really good at doing what we do in schools. You don't want this happening to your kids.
Wow.
And it's not the curriculum. The curriculum's bad, I get that. But the focus on curriculum, we've really got to get off the focus of what they're teaching. It's the stuff that you don't see. And there's good teachers in the system. Mm-hmm. But the system is what's indoctrinating kids. So he said, the first one is conformity. I teach conformity. I teach class position. You know, kids don't determine so much where they're going and what they're going to learn. They get put into, you're either in special classes or you're held back. Mm-hmm. So he said, I teach, like envying of the better classes and resentment of the better classes. And I can't remember the wording exactly, but so it's conformity, it's class position, it's intellectual dependency. We're trained. Before it was our elders that had wisdom that we turned to. Now we've taken the elders and we've put them on what he calls old folks reservations. And mm-hmm. we've made their knowledge irrelevant. And we've traded that out for you have to trust professionals. Right. I mean, people that I know when they've got young kids, they go to their pediatrician for everything.
Right, right.
They go to their pediatrician for like stuff that what like that doesn't have anything to do with what, but the pediatrician is now the god in that situation. It's what you would have historically went to your grandma for.
Right, because they have letters after their name. Somehow they yeah. must have greater levels of knowledge than you. And take a look at that woman from Canada, the Canadian actress who got Bell's palsy from taking the jab. And at the end, she said, and I do it all over again. Like, holy shit. Pardon my language. But I mean, there is somebody who has really learned nothing. A good, obedient sheep. That's exactly what we don't want. All right. We've got our first caller on the line. It's DJ Vector. Brooklyn, I'm serious. I hope that you call in. It's always good. We haven't had you on the line in a long time. But let's go ahead and bring in DJ Vector. And just so you are aware, Moira, he is one of our Australian correspondents. And
I recognize the name.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think Australia has always, to me, kind of had that the same vibe as Alaska, because it's vast. You have a lot of, you know, open country. I've always been drawn to Australia in the same way that I've been drawn to Alaska. I love wildlife. I like camping. I like hiking. And I know that it's a little bit hotter down there in Australia. But Vector, are you there?
Yes, I am, Zach. How are you? Hello, Moira. Pleasure to meet you.
Hello.
Love from down under. The Australian people love America. Well, I do anyway, that's for sure. I guess I'm not as normal as most people. Look, I
you are. Hey, you are the most normal person I've ever met. Yeah, and you're great. I love you. And I mean normal in a good way, not in a sheep way.
Well, at least I'm honest with you. At least I don't say things to your face that I really don't mean, even if sometimes the things that I say people don't like, but you know 100% that that's what's on my mind. So
exactly.
I mean, and I like authenticity and loyalty, Zach. So this is the thing about this community as well. There's such incredible loyal people that they're sacrificing their time and their money, their skills. They're doing everything so that we can awaken half the population that just seem to be ignorant, willfully so, and really dumbed down. I understand.
Amen.
So one thing I wanted to say to Moira was that my daughter's, she's off the charts genius. and, you know, she's in special classes and all that stuff for, you know, instead of like special needs, because she's not smart enough. She's way too smart to be doing what she's doing. So she just graduated from high school. But my wife read to her when she was in the womb, and we read to her constantly, to the point where she was 5-6 years old and starting school, and she could read perfectly with a plum in her mouth, The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. And, you know, like this just blew everybody's minds. You know, the teachers were like, how is your daughter fully reading? We don't know what to do with her when we're teaching kids A and B and C in the first grade. And we what do you do with kids like that? So this is the potential of our children, ladies and gents. And
yes.
The teachers, go ahead, Matt.
Well, and no, exactly. I mean, when we get out of, oh, it's supposed to happen now, we can really take stock of who the child is. Really who they are and where we can foster what. So when we're worried that they're not doing this over here, we're totally missing that there's something else that they're really excelling at. And that's super important. And I do wanted to tell you, I actually finished my rolfing training in Sydney. I spent a few months there and I always thought I could live here.
Yes, well, you should see what Brisbane's like. Sydney's a bit big and fast and stuff, but Brisbane's absolutely beautiful. It's like a big country town, and we call it Bris Vegas because there's literally nothing happening here at all ever. Everything shuts at 9-10 o'clock in the evening, and it's not that exciting. But I like the place. You know, it's a great place to raise a family and that sort of thing. I'm glad I'm living in Victoria in Melbourne. That's no good at all. What else can I say? Well, what now, Maura, for you? I mean, where are you going to be taking this forward? How are you going to be taking this nationally, and maybe going around and speaking to different school boards and that sort of stuff? And hopefully those school boards will have been taken over by patriots at this point. I mean, I don't know how many times I've got to ask people to go become a committee precinct and go and be a poll watcher, run for office, run for dog catcher, run for school board, unless you want some Muppet teaching your children things that you don't want them being taught, especially all the LGBT stuff and all the gender fluidity stuff, because that's something that my daughter did say to me when I was put back in contact with her. And she's like, Dad, I've been learning about all this gender fluidity and this and that, and I don't like President Trump because, he doesn't want to let trans in the military and things like that. So she went to a Catholic school. I don't know how much we pay for this school, but this school is like really expensive. It's not like, you know, so what are they learning at the school? And why are we giving them $25K a year to, you know, for nothing? So that was pretty disappointing.
You know, I'm not really all that surprised to hear that, Vector. I mean, considering what Project Veritas exposed, I mean, those were private schools. You know, I don't know that they had any theological tenets to them, but I mean, I think people have thought, oh, I'm going to send my kid to a private school. I'm going to send them to a Catholic or a Christian school, and they're going to get a better quality of education than they would at a public school. But it's quite obvious that the level of indoctrination and the covert Marxism and collectivism and, you know, all of that stuff has been snuck in at every single type of educational institution in America, whether it's, you know, elementary, high school, or, you know, higher education. I mean, it's just overly prevalent in every single space.
Maura, where are you in the United States, if I may ask?
New York. I'm in upstate New York country.
Right.
I say New York and everyone thinks New York City, which I have lived down in the city, but I'm up around the Adirondacks, which is very, very, very rural, beautiful.
Oh, that's nice. I can't wait to come up and say hello and see you guys. But I also, Zach, I've been so worried about you. I did a 12-hour stream during that storm, and I was covering the storm at the same time, and we were really worried about you. And I emailed you, and I was panicking. I'm like, please, bro, can you tell us something?
Oh.
Just because we were worried sick, and Olivia's like, what's going on with Red Pill? He hasn't even gone on. He hasn't said anything. I said, look, I honestly don't know. But I saw that the storm was right over you guys, and I saw this footage of flooding and just really bad destruction. Now, and I've seen this kind of thing because I lived in Cairns for 11 years. So I've seen Category 5 cyclones. I lived through Cyclone Yasi. So that was pretty serious in about 2012 or 2011. So I feel for you, man.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to alarm anybody. You know, I mean, I was pretty stressed out over the last couple of days. I mean, this last week, first of all, making sure that I had everything to be ready in the event that something was to happen. You know, getting that generator literally was like a 48-hour mission driving all over the state of Florida and coming up empty-handed over and over and over again. So when I finally got it and we got everything here, you know, we lost power on the first night. And so I was able to use it. It came in very handy. And then the next day, I kind of thought we were in the clear. And then we were losing power, losing phone service, losing internet intermittently throughout the day. And so I kept trying to do something, and I kept being unsuccessful. And so at a certain point, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to focus on the storm and making sure that everything's okay. The animals, they did not want to go outside. That was a real adventure to make sure that they went outside and went to the bathroom. They didn't go to the bathroom in the house. I'm very proud of them there. And Smokey, my cat, was very calm the entire time. So I ended up falling asleep pretty early last night. Like at a certain point, I think that I just had like an adrenal crash, and I fell asleep, and then we went to bed, and I, you know, probably around, I don't know, maybe 9 o'clock or so last night, it seemed like it had pretty much left the area. And so I went out and I cleaned up a bunch of stuff. And then earlier today, I did the same thing. We walked around the neighborhood and kind of saw what was going on. But I'm really lucky that we have reliable power now. My buddy Joey, I don't think he's here because he's without power, but 1.4, 1.5 million people still without power all across Florida. There was a lot of flooding on the coast. Our beach is gone. Our pier is gone. You know, they have a whole section of the A1A that's completely shut down. So, I'm sorry. I did not mean to alarm anybody. I just, you know, I guess I was like overly focused on what was in front of me and making sure that that everything was safe here. But I appreciate you, brother.
That's okay. I don't want to alarm anyone either. Like, and Moira and Zach, you have to understand, Zach's very important in this community. He's done so much work over the last 7 years, almost more than anyone that I've seen. And I called this many months ago, probably last year. I said, Zach's going to be number one. Zach's going to interview President Trump. Zach's going to the top. And by hook or by crook, that is happening now. That's a fact. So if anything happened to you, Zach, it'd be a tragedy for our movement. So please take care of yourself. And
I will, brother.
And understand that there are people around the world that I hate saying it, but that we're relying on you, and we're trying to step up and do as much of the job ourselves as we can so that we've got some redundancies and that sort of stuff, and give people some variety. Before I go, I just wanted to thank you all for your support and your love. And thank you, Moira, for doing what you're doing. Let's get back to traditional values. Teaching kids how to cook, there's a good skill. Peeling potatoes. This is what happens when you touch the oven when it's hot. You burn yourself. There's nothing better, is there, really, than teaching. My son burned himself on the barbecue once on the coals. He was 4 years old. Never again. He's an expert now. He can light a fire at 6 years old. I'm like, I light the fire, Sammy. And he's like, yep, no worries, Dad. And he'd go and do that. So that's beautiful. Nice. So thank you to you, Moira. Thank you to Zach, to
love you, brother.
A real Red Pool fiance and Red Pool mom, all of your audience. I love you. And I'll see you after the show.
All much right. Love. See you, man. Thank you for calling, Vector. Right. We'll talk to you soon, man. Love you.
Later.
All right. So there was a lot going on the last couple of days. I was just going to say, I learned that lesson of burning yourself when I was a kid. We had a glass top stove at my mom and dad's house when I was little. And there was like a light on the back, you know, that would turn on when it was hot. And I was, you know, a short kid. And so I would like boost myself up on the counter to like reach into the cupboards and grab things. And I like boosted myself up, put my hand right on a hot burner, and didn't realize it. And I had like the entirety of my finger almost was one giant blister. And that was more pain than I had ever felt at that point in my life. And, ever since then, I was always very, very careful of, making sure that I didn't do something stupid like that again. All right. We've got another caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air. Can we get a name?
Dave.
Dave, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm great. So tonight's call was a little personal for me because I'm 44 and we unschooled our three children. two of them are adults at this point. And I just wanted to give, you know, I guess some words of encouragement to people thinking about doing it. It is totally worth doing. I have helped many of people get started in that. And it's not as difficult as people think. I think that people tend to think that the school system is the standard, and I don't believe that at all. We always kind of thought it was our responsibility to educate our children, and that's kind of the angle we took. One of my oldest is in college now. She's made the dean's list. She chose to do that. We didn't force them to go to college, but she wants to follow career paths down that. So she's headed down that path. I got one left, and yeah, I can't recommend it enough.
So here's something definitely that I'm interested in, Dave. You know, I think a lot of people think that in order to go to college, you must have graduated from high school. You must have a diploma and all of these, I guess, signs and seals and letters to be able to get accepted. Was considering the fact that you, you know, unschooled or homeschooled your kids. I mean, was that any issue when your daughter decided she wanted to go to college?
No, actually it wasn't. So what we did is there's plenty of places online. We basically ordered a diploma. I signed it. My wife signed it and we supplied a transcript and she was admitted. She's been to now, two different universities because we recently moved and she wanted to stay closer to home. And I mean, she's done very well at both of those and had no issue whatsoever getting in.
Wow. And then, so, obviously, in school herself, you said that she's on the dean's list. So, you know, not having that traditional Common Core education, that hasn't been any issue for her. She hasn't had any limitations, or there wasn't things that she didn't know that she should have known.
I mean, there probably was some, but I mean, the people who taught her were at home with her. So All we were able to assist her along with that. And you know, throughout the course of this whole thing, I've always said to people, how much time do you think your child gets in a school, one-on-one time with a teacher throughout a day or even a week? And everybody says it's not very much. So, I mean, if you're doing just an hour a day, one-on-one with that child, they're probably getting more, far more than children in the school system.
Sure. Definitely. Now, how did you guys do it? Are you and your wife both self-employed? Is one of you staying at home and basically handling the education?
So during the course of their education, my wife stayed home. So I was active duty military, okay. Recently retired. So, I mean, we were able to make ends meet, and she was the one who primarily did that. She ended up joining the military later, so I stepped in actually for that period of time and was the primary person. Cool. That was teaching during that time. And I always, for unschooling, it's I kind of go back to things I've learned throughout my life. Like, if you're not interested in something, mm-hmm. you're not going to have an aptitude for that thing. You're just not. And it's not till you get a little bit later in life that you realize that you may need to pick up some of those skills. So for me, I graduated high school and I had a ninth grade reading level because I had some learning disabilities. By the time I got done through the military, realizing that I needed to get better at this, I supervised people with master's degrees and I had to correct their grammar. I had to correct what they were turning in for me when I was supervising them. So interest is the thing that drives, and that's really what we pushed to them, is how to be self-motivated and figure out what you need to do to get where you want to be.
Yes, absolutely. Cool.
Very cool. Now that you've done it with a number of kids, Dave, is there any other tips or tricks, things that you would offer parents in terms of people who might be considering doing this?
Really, just the biggest thing is to have the courage to just go do it. Because mm-hmm. initially, my wife came up to do it, and she mentioned that she wanted to be the one that did it, and I was a little bit, you know, apprehensive because, you know, I didn't do the best in school, so I was a little bit scared. But once we got going, there were so many side benefits that I never even considered. Like just the time in a school system that your child spends being shuffled from place to place to place, like to go to lunch, to go to recess, to go to the library or whatever. All that time is saved throughout the day when you bring them in to educate them. They're not spending their time just kind of being shuttled around. And the amount of additional sleep they got was huge. I noticed immediately with my oldest, because she was the only one that went to regular school. She made it to the second grade. I noticed immediately behavior was much more focused because she was, you know, there wasn't that mad rush in the morning to get them up and get their coats and get, you know, make sure they had lunch money and get them on the bus or get them to school. None of that. It all just stopped. Wow. And it was a lot easier to just manage your day and manage your time.
Well, Moira.
Oh, and the other.
Oh, no, go ahead, Dave. Go ahead.
The other tremendous benefit I noticed was they spend a lot more time dealing with adults, so they handle themselves much more like an adult than they do a child. And they definitely have friends. They're very social. They get along, but they're definitely able to handle themselves with adult much better.
So Moira, I would, and any commentary on what Dave has had the experience with?
No, I think that sounds exactly like I would expect it to. Okay. Also, I wanted to say that there's the universities are, they have people actively looking for homeschoolers.
Really?
They want homeschoolers because homeschoolers are coming in with an excitement and a drive that they're not seeing in the public school kids. So, yeah, no, that's I think great. That sounds exactly spot on. And it's always exciting to hear other stories of people doing it or having done it.
So, Dave, if I may, your living experience, I mean, were you living in like standard housing? Or were you living on base? Do you think that the community had any effect on the success of your kids?
Most definitely. The military had pretty good youth programs that they all got involved in, and they very much excelled throughout the course of that. Mm-hmm. And to this day, they're still involved in that. And those things carried right into, you know, college applications and things like that, and, right. and life experience in general.
So if I may also, what are your kids going to be when they grow up?
Well, I guess we're still kind of waiting to find out, but my oldest is going to school. She wants to work in the museums. She wants to be a curator of a museum.
Awesome.
My middle daughter, she wants to go to school for photography. She's very interested in that. And my son is kind of the jack of all trades and master of none. So he's still not quite sure what he wants to do yet, but we're willing to help him in any way we can.
Well, he's got plenty of time, it sounds like, and a great influence around him. Okay, awesome. Well, anything else you want to tell the audience, Dave?
Nope, not at all. Just if you're thinking about doing it, just you got to take the plunge and go for it.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much for the call, man. I really appreciate the perspective.
Yep.
All right, and thank you for your service. Bye. Appreciate you watching. We'll see you. Okay, so that's got to be awesome. Obviously, yeah. You know, we want to hear success stories. And, you know, as I said earlier, anybody who I know that was homeschooled, you know, was a lot smarter than the rest of the people that I knew growing up. You know, I think that we have a tremendous opportunity here. So do you have any type of, I don't know, resources or places that people can go to if they want to learn more about this stuff, if they're interested in trying this at home?
Yes. So the number one thing that I recommend to anyone is John Taylor Gatto's work. He has lots of books out there. I'm talking to people whenever I can. I kind of spend all of my day talking just to get that philosophy out there. Again, I just want to say again, there is a difference between unschooling and radical unschooling. So be very aware of who you're talking to and where you're finding the resources, because it's a very different thing. But I think John Taylor Gatto, all of his writing is really, it's amazing. And I have a Telegram channel and I post quotes of his all the time. We sadly lost him in 2017. Mm-hmm. But he actually wrote an open letter to Trump back in 2015 in support of him. He was big in the New York City scene. And so I think that any of his work is really, everybody needs to read that book. And it sold like a lot of copies. And interestingly, I think a lot of people, if they have a master's in education, have read his work. So mm-hmm. I think it's very interesting that it's not implemented at all. And I think it shows the power of the system.
Sure.
Because if they were really reading his work, I don't think that the system could exist the way that it does, because he really does a great job at exposing kind of the dark underbelly of it.
So I am familiar with John Taylor Gatto, but I've never read anything by him. But it sounds like maybe he aligns with Charlotte Iserby, who wrote the Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. Is there any correlations there? No,
I don't know. I don't recognize that name. I'm not sure who that
so
is.
She was, I want to say she worked in the Reagan administration, but she wrote this book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. It was kind of an impeachment of the public school system. And I think you'd probably enjoy it. I'd actually be very interested to hear your perspective on it, especially in relation to Gatto's work. But yeah, I mean, I've heard his name bandied around quite a bit over the years. And I'm trying to think, you know, where I was introduced to him. I mean, it might have been, I think maybe Alex Jones talked about him or something at some point along the way.
A lot of people have mentioned his name. Like, he's definitely been there on the outskirts of things that people have talked about. Generally, the alternative education world, it's called democratic schools.
Okay.
That's kind of who takes over kind of the helping families to homeschool. And it really is, I mean, my experience of it is they're doing just as much of the gender stuff and the BLM stuff. Mm-hmm. They're bringing all of that along. It's very infiltrated, in my opinion. So I think very sadly, there's not a huge conservative voice in the alternative education in the education world right now. And I think that that really needs to grow.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Now, one thing that has definitely been removed from traditional education is civics and understanding of how the United States government works and how the system is supposed to work and how you're supposed to be a part of it. I mean, do you make sure that this is something that you instill in children in this kind of, you know, unschooling freeform education?
Well, I think that the best way of doing that, well, one of the best ways of doing that is living it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we can say all we want to our kids about what to do, but if we're not living it, living it in our lives. So I was one of the state organizers for the road rallies for Trump in 2020. We did three of them. And he was a trooper. As I was sitting on my computer emailing people, he went to all the rallies with me. He was always like sticking his head in the video when we'd had our meetings. He was there great. He was there through all of that. He went with me to everything. And that's what kids really need to see. There wasn't that many kids that were coming to that stuff. They need to see us living it.
I agree.
You know, it's like, you can't say, you know, live your life this way while we do the opposite, because do as I say, not as I do doesn't, you know, really work. So I think that that's really how kids will get it. But there's a lot of resources out there. Rush Limbaugh has some great kids books. PragerU has some great kids books.
Mm-hmm.
Tuttle Twins. I'm always recommending the Tuttle Twins. They have fantastic. Those are all like it's like kids are learning the concepts, like the principles, like the free market, eminent domain. They're in like books for 5-year-olds. They're understanding them. They're talking about, you know, how big business gets in bed with the governments and makes regulations to push small business out. Mm-hmm. So it's about finding stories that uphold the values that you care about and the principles that you want to instill. It's not about, you have to go memorize this and then we're going to test you on it. You just have to bring it into your life. But instead of your kids being parented essentially by other people, they're with you and they get to see how you live. And
absolutely.
You're
thank you to Brooklyn. She just threw your Proton out in the chat, also your Telegram, t.me/thelearningweb, and then your Substack as well. So tell me I understand you have a website that you're building as well.
Slowly. Yeah, I had a Rolfing website. So Rolfing is what my training has been, and it's a type of body work. And I, you know, I had a website that I maintained for years and years. And yes, we're working on it.
Okay.
It's not my favorite part of it. I'd rather be talking to people, but mm-hmm. you know, I'm working on it.
So with all of the explosion in homeschooling, I mean, do you think that that things are changing in your community? I mean, is this becoming easier? Do you think that children have a better chance now?
I do. I think that what I'm really seeing a lot now is that we've really been trained that the government provides the infrastructure that we use.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of families that they want to pull their kids out. That's amazing. But there's not a lot of community infrastructure that's not supported, you know, not provided by the government for them to use. So families are really struggling right now. And I think that that's really one of the things that really the general population, we need to step up to the plate and help. So I look out at where people are going and they're turning to, there's an event venue here in the state that it was, they have an event going on where they're teaching like sustainability. And there's all these great classes and there's a lot of homeschool families really excited about it because that was one of the events that we had. This venue is paid for and built by the Rockefeller money. Mm-hmm. So, or you've got the universities that are providing, you know, the Cooperative Extension Service, which there's some beautiful things. I was part of 4-H my entire childhood and that's part of the Cooperative Extension, but it's government funded. Like we're so used to that somebody else provides these things. So we wait for them to jump on their bandwagon. We really need to step up to the plate as we, the people, mm-hmm. to build the infrastructure that all these, I mean, millions of people desperately need. So I think that it's a very, very exciting time because there's been such a big influx. But I imagine this is kind of like when our country had a big influx of immigrants, where it was kind of like, oh my gosh, we've right. really got to like keep up with this. And I do worry that there'll be more of the, we're just going to recreate the government system.
Yeah.
It's going to look a little different. We're going to feel better because the content looks different on the outside, but it's not really going to be different. And it's still going to be controlled by, you know, it's still going to be controlled by people that ultimately don't want us to have freedom.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, there's always the possibility of people inserting themselves with nefarious motives, you know. I see a lot of people who are like, you know, tell me how, you know, what am I supposed to do? And I think, you know, kind of the basic tenet of what you're kind of discussing here is, you know, people figuring out what they're supposed to do and kind of coming to that themselves rather than being directed or led in how to do it and relying on somebody else to do it for them.
Yes. Yes. And that's where, I'll go back to the community, like support, you know, having people that we can, we lost the religious exemption for vaccinations here in New York 3 years ago now. So there was a big influx of families in homeschool that now they're like in their third, maybe they're entering their fourth year now of homeschool. So they were freaked out 4 years ago, but they've got it figured out, you know, quite a bit now. And so for them to really be able to say, hey, we're here and we can help support you through this is I think a really important thing. And there's amazing like little pods of people. There'll be co-ops that start. So they'll rent like the basement of a church for a couple hours, one day a week, and they get a really tight knit group of like 5 to 10 families. And that's beautiful. That's wonderful. There's a lot of that going on. But I think ultimately we also need to just tap into the larger community. We need to tap into the Italian grandmother that can teach like how to make really good pasta from scratch. We need to tap into the grandfather or someone that's retired, but you can help kids figure out how to change the tire or change oil and a group can get together. We need to talk, you know, and connect with maybe retired military that can teach a group of kids how to go out in the woods and build a shelter and start a fire and cook a meal.
Yeah.
And that's not then just reliant on the families figuring it all out for themselves, but it can kind of deprogram the parents at the same time it's teaching the kids, and you're bringing that community back together in a way that right now, again, we segregate everybody. We put the elderly over here, we put the kindergartners over here, you know, the parents, you know, we're trying to just make ends meet. I mean, especially now with inflation, like right. we're just trying to pay the bills. So I think that there's a lot of possibility in that. And there's an amazing, amazing future. But I do think that we need to ask those questions of really digging into the corners of that indoctrination that we don't necessarily realize is there, or these assumptions that we have that education needs to look a certain way.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're absolutely right. Okay, so what is rolfing? I mean, you say that Brooklyn says, I love rolfing. I don't know what that is.
Rolfing is Okay, so if a massage therapist works on muscle fibers,
yeah,
and a chiropractor works with bones, the Rolfer works with the fascia and the connective tissue. So if you take out all the bones and you take out all the muscle fibers, you have the structure, the shape of your body, and the fascia and the connective tissue. Mm-hmm. I love the work, but what I love most about the work is it's talking about a living dynamic system. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a car is a type of a system, but a human is constantly evolving and changing. It's a very dynamic thing. Mm-hmm. So it's teaching like that system you can overlay on lots of different things. And I think I understand kind of childhood or the education thing through the eyes of the Rolfing training, which is, it's this beautiful system. So Rolfing is a lot of like injury rehab stuff, tendons, ligaments, like helping with like a frozen shoulder or surgery after surgery or things like that. But it's really looking at the whole system of your body and how all the different elements work together. And it's not teaching it anything new. It's simply trusting that intelligence is still there. And if we find restrictions, our bodies are amazing. We're amazing at being able to adapt and adjust to injuries. But if we can step back and kind of find where those restrictions are and pull them out and say, that doesn't necessarily have to work that way, and then let the body integrate that and move more, move smoother.
Okay. So, okay, cool. Yeah, well, I blew one knee out skiing and the other one jumping over a 12-foot fence, so maybe I could benefit from Rolfing. Okay, Brooklyn's on the phone. Good. Let's bring her in. Okay. And thank you very much for hanging out with us tonight, guys. Brooklyn, you're on the line. Welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Oh, hi. How's everyone doing?
Hi.
Oh, this has been so lovely, and I'm sure everyone out in the audience who's tuned in is really grateful for the radically optimistic and freshness of the perspective, because right now, as you know, I'm so glad that you said what you said about being extremely mindful when beginning to engage in the homeschooling community, because it's very true what you say, like a lot of the alternative education community is an extension of these other Marxist communist worldviews, like that are stemming from SEL, so critical theory, gender theory. And what's crazy, I was speaking to someone, he owns his own, he's a big fan of the show, a friend of mine that's in North Carolina, and he and his wife make small batch CBD. They're just lovely patriots. And he said his wife went for an interview, for example, with a homeschooling outfit, right? She wanted to get involved to help homeschool other people's kids. And she asked, do you all have CRT or any part of SEL? And she was so glad she asked, because they said, yes, we are following those protocols. And so that's very scary, because people think that they've pulled their kids out of this toxic, this indoctrination. You know, the Department of Public Instruction has become nothing more and nothing less than the federal government's indoctrination arm. They are now raising activists, and it's pretty scary. So I was just grateful. What has it been like for you encountering parents who are shell-shocked from pulling their children out of school because of the indoctrination, and then not knowing where to go due to their schedule constraints or needing to work? I mean, what advices do you offer for people who are just sort of waking up to the fact that the DPI is toxic and they need to get their kids out? Like, how do they merge into that with efficacy?
Well, it's very challenging. And I've noticed there seems to be about a 3-year cycle,
right?
Where it's like the first year is complete freak out. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Everybody's stressed. The kids are stressed. They're trying to do, generally, the stress is coming from trying to do public school in home.
Right.
So they're miserable, but they feel like they have to, because they've gotten to a point that they see that the current system is just not working. By the second year, they're like, oh, okay, I can do this. We can do this. It's okay. And then by the third year, it's like, oh, okay, I've got this. We're not going to go back to last year. You know, the first year that was miserable. We can really kind of start exploring alternatives. But I do find that the indoctrination goes really deep. I do not think that it's an overstatement to say mm-hmm. that our public education system is as much a cult as anything.
I am working very closely with a former independent journalist. I mean, she's well known in North Carolina. Her name is Sloan Rockmuth, and she has an organization. They vet candidates. It's called Ed First Alliance North Carolina. And there's also Gabrielle Clark, who was the first person to file a federal lawsuit and regarding, you know, how to sue them if they're indoctrinating your child. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the controversial figure, but who's become quite a pal of mine, is Carlin Borsenko with the Unwoke Army. And her goal is to educate 10,000 parents. I'm working on this project with her because I wanted to be involved, to educate 10,000 parents so that they know, because like what you're saying, that first year, if it is a 3-year cycle, they come out shell-shocked. And part of that wanting to empower parents so that they can advocate on behalf of their child's education, whether it be a linear traditional system or not. I mean, it's the DPI is nothing more and nothing less. We have been doing these spy streams where we stream stuff. She streams on her channel. And the information that we are learning, what they are doing. And they actually said a lot of these democratic socialist groups and like DSA, for example, all across the country, including in North Carolina, Carolina Federation, for example, is one, New Hanover for All. They're very active in Durham as well. They have not been shy about their intention to place candidates, school board being one of their main focal points, in roles of elected responsibility, decision-making roles of responsibility, to move that needle into this socialist framework. That's what the DEI is all about. That's what the equity officers are about. That's what the gender enculturation is about. And it's scary. And I think that the information that you are offering, like I said, I mean, Zach, thank you for encouraging me to call in, because
sure.
What I've been studying has just, what I've been working on with Carlin through her project, Actively Unwoke, Unwoke Army, has been very, it's like, we're taking one for the team. We do this socialist Saturday. We watch their streams. We watch their content. It takes a tough skin, because I'm seeing firsthand, like their lips to my ears, exactly what they are doing, what they've done, and what they plan to do moving forward. And all I can say to anyone out there listening right now is we can't get comfortable for even a second, because you would be shocked if you could hear some of the stuff that these people are planning and implementing, and they are well-funded.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what's scary too, is a conversation I had just last week, but one of the most extreme cases, but families, parents do not feel empowered. They do not feel like they're their children's parent. And no. They have like the ability to do things. She was terrified of asking the school. So her son has some services, like I think a speech language pathologist, maybe something.
So he might have like an IEP or. A
yeah, there we go. I never know right. the technical terms, right. but she was like, it's not helping him. It hasn't helped him for like a year, but she was terrified of telling the school she didn't want to do it anymore. She was like, she didn't think that she was allowed to.
They are very much using this weird coercive control, like Jedi mind trick on the parents as well. And they're also doing it like in North Carolina, for example, one of the things that we've had to hammer into people, and Sloan's been great about raising awareness. Also, No Left Turn US, like our very own superintendent of the state, Catherine Truitt, who is a Republican, was very much involved in the implementation of this program that was geared towards an equity-driven model for teachers of kindergartners and disabled kindergartners. So they're not just getting them young, they're getting them young. Like, that should make everyone very angry, irrespective of party affiliation. The fact that they want to get to them so young really shows you. And then the alienation of the parents is very intentional, whether it's the gender forms, like Glenn Beck talked about it on Project Groomer. That was the work of Sloan. She exposed it. Melissa broke it at our school board meeting. It was in New Hanover County, where I'm located. And then Epoch Times picked it up. And then Glenn Beck picked it up and did Project Groomer. And they have these gender forms where they will send this stuff. They will give your children surveys. You know, anyone listening right now, and I thank you for giving me the ability to say this live. If your child is in the public school system, you must make sure that they are opted out of all surveys. It is imperative, because if they're not, then the information is like vertically analyzed, and then they kind of put each child in a category to figure out what type of mental health services they might need, when in fact they might not need them at all. So the parents are being intentionally left out of conversations. So that subversive level of intimidation is very real, to your point.
Yes. And the other side is so, I don't like using the word brilliant, but like it's a well-oiled machine.
They're diabolical.
Yes. There we go. Like, yeah, it's incredible. It's so, it makes me sad too, because I've definitely heard parents, you know, they choose to leave their kids in. And the argument is, it seems like they think that the kids can fight the system. No, this system no one can win in this system.
Thank you. I've been saying that to someone very close to me, and I said, do not allow the hubris of your internal, like your intimate working knowledge that you've done a good job as a parent. Zach, diabolical is the right word. Mm-hmm. The system is so powerful that they're shellacking them in from rise until rest. And you figure you're sending your children to school and they're within that school system. They're getting indoctrinated from the moment they hit the school property.
And then the other thing that I want to say is that there is so many families that it's one person. It's one person in the family. Maybe their significant other is not on board. Their in-laws, their parents, their aunts, uncles, they are doing this alone, and they're trying as best as they can, but they are alone and they're feeling that. And that's, mm-hmm. again, I'm going to say community again.
Well, this is where, but the word community, they've even bastardized that.
Well, I know.
Whoa, because that's where you get into that SEL thing. Whole community, whole school, whole child.
I know. It's,
That linguistically framed grift, right? Oh, yeah. And then, because it sounds good, right? It sounds good on paper, but the type of learning that you are talking about is engaged and experiential and driven and guided and explorative, right? You know, whereas this is very like activism and very performative and sort of like mediated, you know, but not in a good way.
And they've thought of every little, like all the words that they've used, all the different possibilities. It's already been so co-opted that, it's hard. That's where I'm like, I'm just talking to parents, just talk to as many parents as people out there that this is, it's, you know, we all need to be thinking about this again, even if we don't have kids in the system.
I don't have children at all. And this has become, you know, like, it's one of the most important things that I'm doing in my life right now, because they are the future, right? Like Zach's kid is almost grown, or like, you know, a lot of people in the chat, your kids are grown, but this affects all of us, because this is the future, not just of our republic. And we like to talk about saving the republic, but actually this is the future of the entire world, because doing it in every continent.
And I mean, we need to fix 2020. That is very clear. But if we're not shifting what we're doing with kids, and they're still coming out of that indoctrination,
right?
Like we can't just be focused on just that. That's incredibly important. We absolutely have to, but it's this, we also need to be focused on this.
I mean, this is exactly why I make sure that I have a variety of different thought leaders that I bring to the audience, because obviously, you know, the election, you know, 100%. I mean, like, that is top of the list. One of those very important things. But the next generation of American thought leaders, I mean, that's also vitally important. I mean, we have to ensure that we have a well-rounded base of individuals with a variety of influences and specialties, because these people on the left, I mean, they've done this, okay? They have think tanks, and they have foundations, and they have money, and they have influence. They've been working on this, taking over all these various systems. and they've been doing it for a long time. You said something, you know, earlier, Moira, about, you know, this kind of slow takeover and the injection of all of these various ideas into the system. They, you know, and it I've said it before, the you know, the idea of the boiling frogs. I mean, they have slowly and methodically taken over every aspect of the American system. And now they've just gotten to the point where they can be so open and public about it. And
it's blatant.
Yeah, it is blatant. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm sure there's someone else waiting to get on the line, so I'll wrap it up. But Moira, more power to you, and keep doing what you're doing. And I would love to put you in touch with Carla, and I'll do that on back channels after the show, because I think that you all have interesting things to talk about. Yeah. Thanks, Zach.
All right. Thank you. See you, Brooklyn. Bye. Peace. Glad you called in. Appreciate it. All right. Awesome. And we don't have any more callers, but we're coming down to the tail end of the show. Let me just go through these a couple of thank yous that we have. I'll make sure that we don't have anything on the phone here. Don't have anything on Buy Me a Coffee. Actually, Bonster says, I'm switching from Subscribestar to this platform. I wish I knew which one works best for you. Like, are you paying fees to receive their services here? Are the fees more here than, say, Rumble or Subscribestar? I support iPod over on GiveSendGo, which I prefer personally because they let me set up a subscription for him for 6 months. I don't know how to do that here. Then Luann V says, please stay safe. You and Lisa, much love and prayers from Florida. So Bonster, you know, honestly, I don't really know which one charges me less. I mean, every place is going to charge some type of fee. I also have the recurring monthly subscriptions you can do on the website. All I care about really is that if you feel that you're getting something from the show and you want to support me on a regular basis, it's whatever is most convenient for you. I'm happy with Buy Me a Coffee. They don't put any restrictions on what I can say. I haven't heard of anybody getting shut down on Buy Me a Coffee, getting banned. I don't have a Give, Send, Go set up or anything like that. I never thought to do that. I feel like that's for people who are in emergencies or who have, major campaigns that they need help with. But if you want to support me on Buy Me a Coffee, then that's totally great. And I really, really appreciate it. And I hope that you are getting something from the show. Let me see. Nothing over on Cash App, over on the Foxhole. Insight Gino dropped some shades. Thank you for that, buddy. Sean Joe dropping a cookie. Napkinator 79, thank you for that ship. God First, We the People with a cookie as well. Asty Ball says, thank you again, Zach, for all you do. Glad to hear you are safe. Much love. And then Napkinator 79 says, very informative show. Thank you, Moira and Zach. So thank you very, very much. Also over on Rumble, appreciate those couple of Rumble rants. Remember, if you are on Rumble on a desktop, you can support the show with the Rumble rants, and it creates like a big banner that shows up, and then you can ask questions that way if you don't want to call in. Well, since we're at the end of the program, Moira, I guess I want to know what you would most like for the audience to take away from the conversation tonight, and then also tell people once again where they can find you.
Question everything. Really. And we really need to support. There's a lot of shifts happening kind of behind the scenes for people, massive kind of life altering shifts, and to support that. And I want to say community again, like it's about building. I mean, I'm totally off of all major social media. I did start a Telegram channel. I pulled off in 2020 after the rallies. I said, I really need a break from that. But we really need to build that face-to-face community.
Yeah.
Kids should not be on screens making that community anyway. They need to have faces to look up to and to, yeah. So Telegram is kind of where I've been putting a lot of my focus. I've really been talking to people locally here, but I want to get the word out there on a larger scale. So Telegram has kind of been my main thing. That's where I've been spending most of my time.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, this is something else I've said many times, you know, as interconnected as we are, as many options that we have to connect with each other through electronic means and social media, It oftentimes feels like we're lonelier than at any other point in history. People are connected, but they're so disconnected as a result of all of those connections being made exclusively through electronic means. And I think you're right. I mean, community is very important. And, having the ability to interact with people face to face and in the real world, it really creates a different type of friendship than, say, just, you know, seeing a name on a screen or feeling that you have to post something on social media. I mean, you know, obviously doing what I do, I mean, I have to have a certain portion of my life that is exclusive to electronic means. But, you know, I want to have a larger portion of my interactions to be here in the physical world, because I think that there's, just a lot of richness and diversity in life and experiences that you're not going to be able to get if it's just all through social media. So I think you're right. And I encourage everybody to develop those connections and those real life friendships. Go ahead.
And one last thing, I think the number one thing is whenever we have the urge to teach a child something that we think they need to learn, I think it's important to stop and see what they can teach us, because they have a different, really beautiful view on the world and they see things uniquely. And I think that it'll start helping us open up to see their brilliance.
All right. Awesome. Well, Moira, I want to thank you very, very much for being here. Don't forget, guys, if you didn't get any of the links, you can go to the description of the video. Once again, don't forget the program was sponsored by EMP Shield, empshield.com. Use code RP78, get 50% off, and don't worry about your AC going offline like mine did. They sent me the wrong one, and so I didn't install it yet, and so I'm waiting for the correct one to come. And in the meantime, the power goes out again, and I don't have air conditioning once more. So hopefully that'll be fixed soon. Moira, thank you again for being here. Appreciate your perspective and your fresh ideas. And I think you're right. We have to ensure that the next generation of children are prepared for the world, that they understand what's going on out there, and that they are not just part of the propagandized system that so many of us have fought to extricate ourselves from. Let me pass out the gold pills over here on Foxhole. The Scratchin' has been released. I will be back tomorrow. I will be streaming the Trump rally in Warren, Michigan, my old home state of Michigan. I think that's probably going to start around 7 p.m. And then, of course, we have a number of high-profile America First candidates that are going to be speaking there. And then tomorrow night at 9 p.m., I'm going to be joined by a Navy SEAL by the name of Jordan Barnhart. He is dealing with some really heinous things in his personal life. The mother of his children has essentially taken them from him and used his experience and service as a Navy SEAL as a detriment. And he's fighting back against the family court system. So something that we've talked about here before, but obviously talking about it isn't necessarily going to do something. We got to take some action and help out people with the experiences we've had. So thank you very much once again, Moira. Good luck, everyone. And God bless. We'll see you tomorrow.
Have a good night.
You too.